Hello and welcome to episode 39 of the Edges and Sledges Cricket Podcast. This is your host for the week, DJ. I'm based in London and I'm joined as usual by my co-podcasters Varun in Singapore and Ashwin in Cincinnati. If you're new to the show, Edges and Sledges is a weekly cricket podcast by the three of us where we get together to talk all things cricket. Being Indian fans, we focus on Indian cricket and this is the anti-expert take on things, so I hope you guys enjoy it. This is going to be our last episode for 2018, so big thank you to everyone who's taken the time to listen to us. So let's get straight to the biggest story of the day, guys. What a year it's been for Indian cricket, and what a way to finish it up. India take the Boxing Day test by 137 runs and retain the Border Gavaskar trophy. There was a little concern around the weather, but having lost the first session of play, it took only 27 balls for India to clinch the win. Let's dive straight into it. Ashwin, Kohli won the toss and he elected to bat. What did you make of that decision? And has the toss become really important in Test cricket?
I think it has. I think if you look at the year that India had, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but there was obviously a pretty clear correlation between winning the toss and winning the match. So I think if you specifically think of, I mean, it has been the case in the Australia series, right? In Adelaide and Melbourne, Kohli won the toss and we won the game. At Perth, Australia, Tim Payne won the toss and they won the match. So I think there's obviously some sort of correlation. Having said that, I mean, the truth is we lost four of the five tosses in England. And so Kohli was due, I guess, if we talk about batting statistics and being due with the bat. I think you can also probably be due with the coin as a skipper. But I mean, jokes apart, I think it was the right call to bat. In hindsight, I'm sure we'll get more into it. Having batted first, really grinded it out to get 400 plus on the board was absolutely the right call. The pitch did deteriorate. And of course, Chiteshwar Jadeja, I mean, sorry, Chiteshwar Pujara, of course, Kerry O'Keefe thinks his name is Chiteshwar Jadeja. He batted brilliantly on the day, read the pitch right. And even though some folks at the time thought his innings was way too slow and ruined the match for India, at the end of the day, that was the match-winning knock. So really well played by the team.
Thanks, Ashwin. Varun, I'm just going to ask you a little bit about this MCG pitch, because all the speculation before the game was how the pitch would play, whether it would be a flat track. We'd seen boring kind of draws in the last few games at the MCG, the Boxing Day test was starting to lose its aura. Payne lost the toss, but he said he wanted to bowl first. Now, initially, we thought maybe he was playing some mind games. But even after losing the game, he said, you know, I was about to bowl first. So what did everyone make of the pitch? Mitchell Johnson was saying, oh, Kohli should be scoring 100 on this. He should resign if he doesn't score 100 on this. But what are your thoughts on the MCG track?
Ashwin said it earlier, right? It's become a little bit of case of a win the toss and bat first. But I think when it comes to talking about the pitch, everyone seems to have had a different opinion. There were no mind games from earlier like they were in Perth. And I think Australia got the better of us. I think there were some amazing comments from like Shane Warne who likened the MCG pitch to the surface of Mars. And that's the kind of dust bowl surface it was. To be honest, I think it was a difficult pitch to read. I think nobody kind of knew which way it'll go. It is a drop-in pitch. And that's why, to me, I think the way Pujara and Kohli batted on the first day was absolutely outstanding. Because, again, we know that most of Test cricket does not go till the end of day five. So the way they took their time, assessed the wicket, and I think like any pitch, it kind of does deteriorate in day three, four and five. As I was looking at it, there were almost like black patches when Jadeja was bowling in from one end. So yeah, I think it was a fine pitch. There was no issue from my side.
Yeah, so all the criticism came on day one from the so-called expert saying that, oh, it's a flat pitch and all of that. So what actually dominated the headlines on day one was the Cameron Bancroft interview that aired at lunch, where he came out and said that basically Dave Warner asked me to perform the action on the ball. And I mean, it's been the year of sandpaper, right? So guys, has David Warner completely been thrown under the bus here, Ashwin?
Pretty much, right? So just to quickly recap, in Cameron Bancroft interview happened where he basically said, Warner told me to do this and I did it. And then that was shortly after Steve Smith had said pretty clearly that I didn't know exactly what was happening, but I knew something was going down and it was a bit of a leadership failure for me not to stop it. So personally, I find it very disappointing. I think we were talking about this between shows last week where we were saying this feels like an attempt at a well-orchestrated PR move to save Smith and Bancroft's reputations by throwing Warner under the bus. I think it doesn't change the fact that if Warner came back to all three formats of the game tomorrow, he would be selected just because of how badly the batting order has been doing. But that's, I guess, a separate conversation. So, but I mean, it enabled Bancroft, after his 9-month ban was done, as of yesterday, relative to when we're recording this, he returned to play for the Perth Scorchers in the Big Bash, and he made, I think it was 2 of 3 balls. So not a great return to cricket. Obviously, you expect that, having been away for this long, but just pretty disappointing, this strange PR stunt to do it during the first day.
I quite enjoyed Phil Tufnell's comment, actually, when Cam Bancroft came out to bat. I think it was 16 for 3, where he said, "I hope his mum stitched up his trouser pockets," which I found pretty amusing. But Varun, what about Steve Smith's press conference and his ad with Vodafone and all of that? Is this a complete stitch-up for Dave Warner, just moving the blame onto him? And is, as Ashwin said, is this a rehabilitation exercise, kind of paving the way into these two guys making their way back into the Australian team?
Yeah, it's a bit... I didn't like the way Bancroft came out and threw Warner under the bus, especially so late. I mean, if this kind of an interview had to be done, it should have been done earlier. You're seeing Warner practice with Langer in the team net. You're seeing Finch come out and say, "We welcome them with open arms." So personally, in any team environment, in any team setting, what's done is done. I think for them to come out and specifically target Warner is not a very smart move. The other thing is, it's very funny, right? Like, on day one of the test match, and I'm in India these days, so I'm spending extra time watching extra innings, etc. Michael Clarke kind of was saying that, you know, Smith and Warner coming back won't really make a difference to this team, because even with Smith and Warner, they dropped from rank 1 to rank 5. Without them, they've dropped from rank 5 to rank 6. So he was basically saying that even with them, Australian cricket was not doing very well. By the time you were reaching day 3, day 4, when all those wickets were falling and kind of they couldn't play Jasprit Bumrah, everyone is just saying that, you know, without Smith and Warner, this team looks completely different. You have reactions from, I think, Tim Payne saying that, yeah, if Kohli and Pujara weren't playing, let's see how that goes. So suddenly the whole thing kind of turned. So I'm personally very confused. I think Warner will walk back into this team any day. So for people to be throwing him under the bus does not seem to make any sense to me.
Yeah, the two things I'd just like to quickly point out is that there hasn't actually been an interview with all three of them together, which is a bit strange. I mean, why not interview all three of them together? They've been individual kind of interviews and press conferences and things. And the other thing was, a lot of people were pointing out on Twitter that the amount of reverse swing that the Australians got in this series is a lot less than what they got back in the Ashes last year. So maybe that's just one to ponder. But it is a little bit shocking that the team that did so well, beat the English team, a strong English team, 4-0 last year, was out bowled by an Indian team with the old ball. So I think those were just the two points that I wanted to bring up. Moving on to nicer things. I mean, Mayank Agarwal made his debut on the day one of the Boxing Day test. There was a huge crowd in. There was a lot of expectation from Mayank Agarwal. He came in and scored 76 on debut. He gave India a very good start. Possibly its best start for the last few years, if I'm not wrong, along with Hanuma Vihari. So, Varun, let's just talk through the selection in this Boxing Day test. It was quite interesting that Vihari opened. What did you make of the team that India put out for the Boxing Day test?
You know what, DJ? For the first time in a very long time, I think this is the team that I wanted, that all three of us wanted, and that anyone I spoke to wanted. So there was, from the minute the team was announced, I think there was not a single complaint. You played the spinner, you got rid of both the failing openers, showing that you're willing to make drastic moves. You stuck to kind of Rohit at 6. Personally, I think that is a bad call for Rohit Sharma, that the team did not see the faith in making him open and giving him a new 3-4 year test career. So I think that is disappointing for him. But from the team and the game perspective, there was nothing to complain about with the selection. And I remember telling a friend as well, I said, "Well, now we've all got the team that we want. We better win this game. Otherwise, you're going to almost prove Kohli and Shastri right." So I think the selection was spot on. I think the opening pair, personally, my view is Vihari did more than even Rohit Sharma's 60, even though he didn't score as much. Mayank Agarwal was just fantastic, a combination of aggressiveness as well as using his brain against the new ball. And it's really quite simple, DJ. You and I discussed it in Nottingham as well. Give the first hour to the bowlers. After that, bat all day, bat 2 days, bat 3 days. And that's exactly what India did.
Ashwin, do you agree with that? Do you agree with the selection generally and the lineup, especially the batting order?
Yes, I 100% do. I just wanted to add that this is the first time in my recollection that we, under Kohli and Shastri at least, that they announce the team about 24 hours before. Usually they announce it probables 12 or 13 and pick the final 11 that's only shared at the toss. They were pretty confident that this was going to be a universally accepted team. That's why they announced it 24 hours in advance. And same thing for Mayank. I mean, Varun said a lot about how well his knock was received and how important it was, but let's give credit to the fact that he was on debut. And I don't remember the last time a new Indian player made a debut and there was not one person I heard say he's not ready or he shouldn't have been selected, we shouldn't have picked him yet. Everybody I heard or everything I read said this guy has earned his chance by playing amazingly at the domestic level. So really, really happy.
Just to put that in context, everyone in India, I think, because there was a certain commentator out there called, I think, what's his name? Kerry O'Keefe, who seemed to cast some aspersions on Mayank Agarwal's credentials in first-class cricket in India by basically saying that he scored all his runs against a canteen, Jalandhar canteen 11, and that first-class cricket wasn't really worth anything. Some of those games are quite suspect. Mark Waugh chipped in saying, oh, well, a 50 average there is what a 40 average in Australia would be, and all of that stuff. So, guys, what did we make of that? Varun, what was your feeling once you heard that? I know it's been widely discussed on Twitter. There's been an apology that Steve O'Keefe has come out with, but are you satisfied with his explanation?
I think, I don't know. I think I saw Bharat Arun talking about it as well. And I think the team is ignoring it for now. I think we as fans also need to learn to ignore it, mainly because it is irrelevant to us. But it just kind of shows you the way they are thinking, right? For them to be able to say that a 300 that's hit in India is not as valuable as, say, a 100 and 150 hit in Australia. That's not the way it works, right? Every team has different pitches. Every team has a different local first-class division. And from that same first-class division, you are producing Pujaras and Kohlis who are coming to foreign pitches and scoring hundreds. You are producing Bumrahs and Jadejas and Ashwins who are coming and taking 10 wickets in every innings. So I think it was just, you know, there's a case of, I think he's just trying to be funny. But we didn't kind of see that those comments towards Australian cricketers as much, right? So I think it was just in very bad taste. I love that Twitter kind of erupted so much, and that's the power of social media today. And in fact, Ashwin got us a call out in the online quint as well. But it's amazing what social media can do today to actually get these guys to rethink. The last point I just want to make on this is you are in a situation where you really don't want to mess with India or the BCCI in cricket. 70% of cricket revenues come from one country. As anyone who enjoys the game or wants to be paid by doing something associated with this game, you just can't afford to do that.
Awesome. Ashwin, thoughts about the commentary generally and Kerry O'Keefe's comments? And I know you were the one who kind of brought it to, I think it was Akash Chopra's attention, and that's where things kind of just erupted on Twitter. So thoughts on the Fox Cricket, 7 Cricket commentary and whether this is just Channel 9 redux where everybody is the matiest mates ever and basically just guffawing all the time?
Yeah, I think I have a very, very different take to Varun on this one, where I don't think it was at all acceptable. I think you can say he was trying to be funny. You can say he was, you know, trying to fit in or be one of the mates, etc. It was 100% unacceptable to me. There were two or three big things that were said. The first is he said, as soon as Mayank came out, he made fun of the bowling opposition he plays. And again, this is the side that has taken 20 wickets. This is the bowlers that have taken 20 wickets in all three of the test matches. But he chose to make fun of the bowling attack, saying it was the, I think, Jalandhar canteen 11 or something silly. Then Mark Waugh, when his stats came up on the screen, Mark Waugh actually said, okay, so he averages 50 in domestic cricket. That's around about 40 in Australia. Also completely unacceptable. I mean, you can get into the details and get into the facts, but the point is it was said with a tone that meant to undermine, that meant to belittle. And now your team is down 2-1 at home. And like Varun said, you can't afford to upset India. But I think it's just Australia has a history of racial issues in the game. There was other issues that happened at the ground, which we'll talk about next, I think. But you have to just be, it's 2018. You have to be more sensitive to this. It is completely unacceptable that Kerry O'Keefe said it. It's almost more unacceptable to me, by the way, that he made an quote unquote apology, which didn't say the word sorry, didn't say the word I apologize. He just was in shock, apparently, and how difficult a few days it's been for his family that he, you know, that he was misconstrued and that his jokes were not understood by the public. So again, we are at fault for not understanding his jokes. He's not at fault for making the poor jokes, right? So I'm going to stop there, but you can tell I thought completely unacceptable and should not, he should not be commentating again in Australia. The fact that he is shows that they're willing to accept it.
Thanks, Ashwin. I'm with you on that. I also thought that the Indian team actually dealt with it very well in the post-game press conference, where Isha Guha asked Virat Kohli, what do you credit the bowler's rise to? And his answer, which was, I think he was almost stage managed, was, it's the first class setup in India. It's amazing, he said. And then Bumrah followed that up when he got his Man of the Match award by saying, yes, we bowl a lot of overs in first class cricket in India when the ball is not doing much, which is why we are out bowling the Australians, etc., etc. So it was a very classy kind of counterattack, but I think the point was made. And I think the Indian team did take note of the comments. The other comment that was made was Cheteshwar Jadeja. And why would you name your kids Cheteshwar Jadeja? And I mean, it's 2018 and people, I think, just need to understand that this is not acceptable anymore. I mean, we've had previous Australian commentators called players with beards, terrorists, and Hashim Amla was called a terrorist by Dean Jones when he thought he was off air. There have been issues with Moeen Ali when he went and played in the Ashes last year, where he claimed that someone called him Osama. And those are the kind of things that you cannot see. All other sports have kind of stamped out racism. And for a country which has so many racial issues and has such a history with racial issues, obviously we saw Monkeygate and all of that stuff that happened almost a decade ago. For them not to have stamped this stuff out, even within its commentary, you've got to be almost extra sensitive given the history in Australia. So I find it amazing that this continues. Hopefully, Fox Cricket will take some action. We don't know whether anything is actually going to be done about it, but we'll just have to wait and see. But what I actually find absolutely annoying is the amount of like laughing that goes on. And most, it's like just watching, it's unbearable. So I have to get up like quite early in the morning and have to watch it quite late at night, right? Because there's times where it's 5 a.m. and I've got up and all I'm hearing is Shane Warne just guffawing on television, which, I mean, we think Sanjay Manjrekar is bad or Ramiz Raja is bad. At least they're just talking. They're talking cricket. It's not just laughing at like stupid jokes, to be honest. So, I mean, I've found the quality of commentary extremely, extremely poor. And there's a great article by, I think it's Jeff Lemon, who writes about how Channel 9, the old Channel 9, has undermined the legacy of cricket, etc., etc. And I don't think Fox Cricket and Seven Cricket are doing anything different. So that's just my two bits on the commentary. But other things that went on the same kind of topic, spectators at the MCG were ejected for racial taunts, saying, show us your visa. They also said, Kohli is a wanker. And show us your visa. I mean, we're living in the 21st century in what is supposed to be a developed, civilized country. I mean, I don't know where this stuff is coming from.
I would have, DJ, been there and showed them my Amex, not my visa.
Ashwin, thoughts about the racial chants and all of that went on at the MCG?
Yeah, I mean, I think I said it enough. It's disappointing. I think the ICC, Cricket Australia, Cricket Australia took such a harsh stance on ball tampering, as they should. And I don't think we've heard anything. I mean, they ejected the fans from the game. Well done. But I don't think we've heard anything more concrete about, like you said, what FIFA did, which is stamping out racism and things like that. So I think it needs to happen. I love, just quickly from my perspective, that Kohli showed his maturity where in, I think it was 5 or 6, 7 years ago in Sydney, when they were insulting him, he flipped them off, gave them the middle finger. And this time, you know, as the leader, as the skipper of the team, he kind of bowed his hat at the taunt. So I thought that was great to see, but very, very disappointing to see racism still persist in the game. And I can only hope they take a stronger stance against it, because this is a nation that, like we've just said, has a history of this, and they just need to be better. That's it.
And you know, in 2005, a bunch of us had traveled to Perth to play cricket from our university in Singapore. And we were sitting outside the hostel. It was a 5-day trip. and we were put in a hostel, and we were sitting outside the hostel, and just outside the hostel was a main road where cars were driving by, and around, and Perth shuts down pretty early, so around 7 p.m. we were just sitting by the road, and we had at least three cars that passed us with people sticking their head out the window and shouting at us, saying, go back to where you came from. So that was in 2005. It was pretty shocking to a lot of us. We didn't know how to react. You know, we were 22 at that point, or 20 at that point. It was really scary. And it's just sad to see that 14 years on, things like that are still going on.
That's pretty shocking. It must be quite hard to play cricket out there as the Indian team. And good on them for having dealt with it so much earlier and so well. And they haven't actually got involved with any of the off-field stuff. It's been kept on the field, and I think they've done really well on that. So Varun, maybe you can like launch a new Amex card in Australia, and you can launch a campaign called Show Us Your Amex. What do you think?
That is a great idea.
Hashtag Show Us Your Amex. Anyway, guys, moving on. Let's get to the actual cricket. Pujara. Let's talk about Cheteshwar Pujara. Varun, I know you're really happy with the way he read the pitch. I think you even called him a genius for reading the pitch well on day one. I thought that it's actually the only way he knows how to play. But talk us through Pujara's innings and in the context of the game, how important that was.
Yeah, and DJ, I actually agree with you completely, to be honest. Like, I think you're absolutely right when you say this is the way he plays. But we've seen him before. You and I saw him live where, you know, he's played a rash shot. Even in the second innings of this game, he's played a little bit of a shot that shows the lapse in concentration. For me, it was just, you know, no matter what anyone says about, you know, Bumrah and the pace trio and all of that and the catching and the fielding, for me, this match was set up by Pujara. And it's just that ability to play 300 balls. And it's amazing, like, I don't think he's the fittest guy around. He definitely doesn't look like he can pass the yo-yo test. But somehow this guy can just play 300 balls. Mind you, that probably means he's out there for a total of 500 balls, given the non-strikers playing a certain amount as well. And for the first time, we saw kind of Kohli have back issues and on his knees and try to kind of expedite his innings because he was having back spasms. But this guy just looked like he could just go on. He got out to a delivery that kept really low. And I don't know, maybe DJ, you're right. This is the way he plays. But for me, it just, between Adelaide and this test, I've just been, like, my mind has just been blown at how good he is, how he reads the game. He understands that day five is a tough pitch. So just make as many runs as you can early on.
I'd absolutely agree with that. I think he was dropped for the first test at Edgbaston, and that really hurt him. Since then, he scored 300s, including two in this series. Southampton was a great innings as well. And I mean, Pujara is, he's almost brought, instead of moving towards Kohli's template of what Kohli calls intent, he's almost brought Kohli towards his template of intent, which is wear the bowlers down and score runs when they're tired. And I mean, it's worked beautifully in Australia. And I mean, India have got a solid number three in good form, plays spin very well, plays pace very well. And I think he's been one of the key factors for us being 2-1 up, and where he didn't score runs, which was in Perth. India lost that game. Anyway, coming to Kohli, it has been the year of Kohli. How many centuries has he got? 5? He scored 82 here, had back issues, as Varun says, but he was in the game. And on this podcast, I know we mention Kohli a lot, but we never actually speak about Kohli because it's almost a given that he will perform, he will score runs, he will be there with those exotic celebrations and all of that. He will be extremely fit. He'll run hard through the wicket. He'll show intent and all of that. Ashwin, talk us through what a year it has been for King Kohli.
I mean, absolutely outstanding. This is why we don't really say too much more, because there's very few words left to describe a cricketer of the stature of Kohli. He's just been unbelievable across all three formats. I know we'll talk about Bumrah later, but I read an interesting tweet earlier that said, hey, on January 7th at the end of the Sydney test, can we take Kohli and Bumrah and just lock them away somewhere till the World Cup to prevent any risk of any injury? Because these two players are gems. They've been phenomenal across all three formats at different stages in their careers, of course, but I mean, absolutely outstanding. When it comes to the test match in particular, I think, you know, as we think about cricket following in India and across the globe, the fact that Kohli has decided to invest in Test cricket is probably a big reason why as many people come out to the games as they do. I think there were 70,000 plus on day one at the MCG. Indian fans across the globe are watching Test cricket, where, you know, really, really with the dawn of the IPL, the game could have started to fade away, and it just hasn't. And players like Kohli are the reason for it. I mean, we were all pretty shocked that he didn't convert his 82 to a century. I mean, he has pretty significantly more centuries than he does 50s, which is very rare. So it just shows his conversion rate is incredible. But I mean, I think a great knock, you said it really well, where you said Pujara's kind of converted him to his school of thought. I think Kohli was about 21 of 23, and then it started getting tougher and tougher to bat from, and he just drastically slowed down the strike rate, wore down the bowlers, and ultimately played a huge role in that partnership with Pujara to help us secure the victory.
Varun, very, very quickly, what is your Kohli moment of the year?
Oh man, my Kohli moment of the year. I think he played really well in Perth, man, for me. I'm thinking of the test, but also DJ for me in the ODI, it was the, I think the 170 odd that we saw in Cape Town together, that really stood out for me.
Ashwin, your Kohli moment of the year?
That's a big one. I think probably just the entire England series as a whole. I think we all forget that we went into that series thinking he hasn't performed in England. He's got great average everywhere except England. And he just completely silenced the critics. We lost the series, but as a batsman, he showed them who's boss. He didn't perish to Jimmy Anderson. And he had a phenomenal series there. So for me, it was his tour of England.
And for me, it's actually a moment from the English tour as well. But it's not actually the 100 that he scored. I think the 149 at Edgbaston was amazing. But it was what actually happened before that. It's the mic drop moment, which just shows you Kohli as a person, as a character, as a player. He averages 13.5 in the country until that point. And he runs Joe Root out with a direct hit, absolutely brilliant piece of fielding. And then he just takes a pot shot at the English captain. He's still not scored that 100. You have to remember that. That came in the second innings of the game. But the confidence of the man saying, you know what, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be better than you. You think I can't play in England? I'll show you guys. And then he did. He proceeded to score 593 runs when nobody else got even close to half of that, which, I mean, just phenomenal. What a phenomenal year for Kohli as a batsman as well as a captain. I think there were moments where, we could have won more games, etc., etc. But, I mean, I think he's had an absolutely phenomenal year, and 2018 has got to be the year of King Kohli. No doubt about it in my mind. Anyway, moving on. On to one of my favorite topics, Rohit Sharma, right? So Rohit Sharma scored 63 in the first innings, not out before the declaration came. He batted at 6, benefited from a drop catch when he was 16. But for me, I think it wasn't an innings that cemented his place again. I mean, he's come in with quite an easy kind of platforms already set. It's about 300 for 4. Rahane's batting quite well at the other end. He gets dropped. And for me, what I found very strange, and I don't know what you guys think about it, is that being the senior player, why didn't he take on the role of opening the batting? I mean, we discussed it last week, right? We thought that, well, I think Varun, you thought that Rohit should be opening the batting, and I agreed with that. I said I didn't have a problem with it because he does it in white ball cricket. It's the only place he hasn't played. There's lots of questions about his temperament, etc. But he should have taken the responsibility for me. I mean, Hanuma Vihari's played, what has he played? 3 test matches? And he stepped up and opened the batting. And he's been bounced out twice. He's been found out a little bit with the short ball. But shouldn't Rohit Sharma have taken that responsibility? And I don't know. Varun, Ashwin, what do you guys think? Varun, go first.
Yeah, I think the question for me is, did he put his hand up or not? And then did he get rejected? So, I mean, if I was Rohit Sharma, like I've said this in the last two podcasts as well, right? I'd be putting my hand up and seeing a gap in the openers and saying that you need some experience there, give me a shot. So my take is he actually put his hand up and the team actually rejected that and asked Vihari to open. That to me is a bad sign for Rohit Sharma, because that number 6 slot, there's Rohit Sharma, there's Vihari and there's Pandya all kind of vying for that. And to be honest, Rohit adds the least value because he can't even bowl a single over. So I don't think the signs are good for Rohit Sharma. I think there is a little bit of experience, leadership that he is providing right now to the team. And we'll talk about that probably when the Bumrah discussion happens. But I don't see it as a good sign for Rohit Sharma at all.
Ashwin, your thoughts on where this leaves Hanuma Vihari? What if he fails in the next couple of tests? Is he going to be booted out because he failed as an opener, which is not his natural spot?
Yeah, I really, really hope not. I think he showed very, very good signs. He showed a really positive way of batting. He showed incredible technique. So the selector, Chief of Selectors Prasad, has said he will not be judged in his role as an opener. He's being used as a makeshift opener till they can figure out the long-term plan or till Shaw comes back. But I think if you cement the rest of your positions and say Rohit does well in Sydney and locks his spot at number six, then where does Vihari slot back in? So I think it's very, very disappointing. We've seen some players over the years lose their spots after being tried in a weird position and not performing, and then they just weren't brought back because the public has a pretty short memory. So I really hope not. I think Vihari has a long and bright future in the test team. So hopefully they can stay true to their word and get him back into the middle lower order soon.
That wraps up the batting. So we'll take a very short break and we'll be back with more on the bowling. Thanks, everyone. We're back from our break. Now on to the bowling. The first thing I want to talk about is the Finch wicket, right? The planning and the catch. Those are the two things I really want to go through. So guys, we saw the field was set for Finch on the leg side. And Ishant bowled the ball. Finch played the shot. And Mayank took a brilliant catch. Who would you give credit for that to? Would it be Kohli, the people in the dressing room, Ishant, Mayank? Who gets credit? Was it a complete team effort?
Yeah, so I think it was... I think it's a team effort, but I think these kind of decisions are between the bowler and the captain, right? I think Kohli and Ishant, I think it was very well planned. I mean, Finch has kind of been Ishant's bunny. He's clearly not suited to open at a test cricket level with the red ball. But I think it was great. It was great planning and superb execution from Mayank, right? Who'll be very high on confidence after taking three catches in this game. But I think, yeah, just all around well done.
And Bumrah with his slower ball to get Sean Marsh. Now, I know we mentioned Rohit Sharma's contribution in this game. He scored 63. But was his biggest contribution asking Bumrah to bowl that slower ball to Sean Marsh, the last ball before tea? And he completely did him. Ashwin?
Yeah, I think so. And I think having a player who's captained Bumrah and the Mumbai Indians for a few years now is a huge asset. So great to see. I mean, Kohli misses MS Dhoni's leadership. So I think it's great. I think having that second cricketing brain has helped a lot. And so that's definitely, in addition to the batting, what Rohit brings to the field.
And one of the things Bumrah was actually asked about while he was being asked about the slow ball was how he came about his action. Now, he mentioned to the interviewer that he used to copy a lot of actions back in the day. And so his action was a mixture of a lot of action. So, Varun, what happened to you? We know you used to copy a lot of actions and we tried to get you to release some videos with the hashtag Viva and all of that stuff. So why aren't you partnering Bumrah with the new ball for India?
I don't know, man. I after hearing Bumrah, I kind of thought about it and tried a little run up. And yeah, the action was quite similar to his. But then again, I'm now just like used to copying. But very interesting. He kind of said that it was like an amalgamation of different actions. And I can't say I relate to that. But yes, I because one copies actions so much, even when we used to play tennis ball cricket, I could actually bowl six balls with six different actions. And it used to like mess with the batsman's mind completely. But I think what Bumrah's action is, it's unique. The power is all coming from the back and the shoulders. And he also kind of said that he's got a short run up because he used to play tennis ball cricket where there wasn't enough room to run. So he's just kind of got used to it and you know, with a few steps delivering a quick ball.
So the biggest problem was that you had too much space to run. That was the issue.
I think I had, yeah, the grounds were too big, man.
Okay. These are the same grounds that we used to play on in school.
Man, I don't know. I used to play in class 9A, right? So there was like really no room to run around in a classroom. But
the strongest team in the school.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on, guys. Ashwin, I know this is a topic very close to your heart. You've been going on about Jadeja, right? Since India went to England. Jadeja must play. And look what he did. I think he was absolutely fantastic. And now looking back on it, I almost wish we'd listened to you and the Indian team had listened to you and played him in the Southampton test where he would have hit the footmarks. The accuracy for Jadeja, I think, was just phenomenal. He just kept hitting those footmarks ball after ball after ball. Ashwin?
Yeah, I mean, thank you. I appreciate somebody recognizing when I called something that tended to work out because you guys have a knack for calling out things that I say that don't work out well. So I appreciate that. But really, I think you know, people on the internet are comparing things like Jadeja's number of wickets and his average at home versus away. It's really important to recognize that when he's bowling away, he's not a big turner of the ball anywhere. When he's bowling away, he plays a very, very specific role for the team. And that is to hit the footmarks, plug one end, finish his overs in like within 1 to 2 minutes to drive, add some pressure, give some relief on the over rate, and just allow the quicks to rotate through. And I think he did that to perfection. It's worth noting he also just, whether psychologically or in reality, he adds a little bit of comfort to that lower order. When you have Jadeja batting at eight, it gives you a little bit more comfort in the ability to bat deep. And so both innings this match, we didn't have to bat below that, right? As soon as Jadeja was out both innings, or as soon as the seventh wicket fell, we didn't send our bowlers into face to have to bat. So I think he played his role to perfection. I think it'll be really tricky to see what happens in Sydney, where Jadeja's come off a great match. If Ashwin is fit on a spinning wicket, do we think about playing both of them? And it's just going to be a really, really tough decision. So let's see how that goes.
Interesting. That brings us to kind of the next point. So you've got Bumrah, Shami and Ishant, who've blown away batting lineups all over the world now, have been doing really, really well. They've broken, I think, a record from 1981 for the most number of wickets in a year by a trio. And they've just been absolutely, absolutely fantastic. And I remember mentioning early in the year how Shami kind of irritated me because he didn't look interested. He looks a lot better all of a sudden. He looks like he's focused. He looks like he knows what he's doing with the ball. They've just kind of come together and found their groove. They now support each other. So what do you guys think is going to happen at Sydney with this fantastic pace trio? If Australia bring out a turning wicket and India want to play two spinners, what happens then? Varun, do we drop one of the fast bowlers and play a spinner?
No, no way. No way is any one of these three being dropped. I mean, just talking about the fact that they picked up the most wickets in a calendar year in tests, it's phenomenal, right? We just could not, I don't think we could ever imagine that sort of a day would come in Indian cricket. And let's not forget that over the year, Hardik Pandya has had wickets. He's had a fifer. Bhuvi in South Africa picked up a lot of wickets. So despite playing in India, despite Bhuvi, Umesh and Pandya, they still picked up, I think, over 130 wickets. So it's really phenomenal. Coming to the point of the next match, yeah, I think they won't change the team. But if somebody has to give way, Rohit Sharma will have to give way for Ashwin.
Ashwin, thoughts on the quicks as well as the combination for Sydney?
Yeah, I was going to echo that. I think if they do decide to play the second spinner, it'll come at the cost of the batsman, because you would think Ashwin and Jadeja combined to give us one batsman. So it'll give them a little bit of comfort. I'm not sure. It depends on fitness. Unless one of these three quicks, you know, they all put in quite a lot of overs and it's been a heavy workload for them. So obviously there's a chance one of them is injured or decides to be rested. That's the only reason I think we'll see a change.
Great. So the last few points I think I just wanted to pick up on from the Boxing Day test was the follow-on. I thought that the follow-on shouldn't have been enforced given that the Sydney test starts 3 days from now. Also, there were some stats put out by ESPN Crick Info saying that your chance of actually winning the match did not increase by enforcing the follow-on, which I thought was very interesting. You can't legislate for the weather and all of that stuff. So I thought the right decision was reached. You've got to protect your bowlers. You've got another test coming up. And I thought that Kohli would have enforced the follow-on if it was the last test of the series or the bowlers had a week off between test matches. The fact is that they didn't. And I thought the right decision was reached. So very quickly, guys, thoughts on the follow-on, Ashwin?
Yeah, I mean, to be completely honest, I didn't think it was the right call when it happened. I thought, let's try to clean them up. But having really been through the match, I'm willing to accept that I think it ended up being the right call. I think the bowlers got a bit of rest. You know, when we were 54 for 5, I was definitely saying this was the wrong call. But, you know, when the result goes in your favor, you accept that it was probably the right thing to do.
Varun?
I mean, for me, honestly, last night and today morning, waking up with rain, it was literally a Mumetha moment for me. I was really worried, and I was kind of like, why did Kohli do that? But yeah, it was more from a emotion and a passion perspective. I think looking at the Sydney test 3 days from now, I totally agree with the decision. It was just rain that was playing on my mind.
Awesome. So coming to the most important topic of the entire test match, right? Given our podcast is called Edges and Sledges, sledging. Tim Payne, the great Australian classy sledger, sledged first Rohit Sharma, about the Mumbai Indians and saying that if Rohit hits a six here, he'll switch to the Mumbai Indians. And then Rohit actually sledges him straight back and says, yeah, if Payne scores 100, I'll put in a word with my boss for him. Obviously, Payne didn't score anything. The Mumbai Indians actually even trolled Payne after he got out in the second inning saying that, yeah, he scored 23 or whatever odd runs. And then Tim Payne goes ahead and starts trolling Rishabh Pant about how he should babysit his kids and how he should come back to the... how MS is now back in the one-day team, so this guy's going to be doing nothing, so why don't he play for the Hobart Hurricanes and all of that stuff. And then Rishabh Pant comes out and says, let's go, and calls Payne a temporary captain. who all he does is talk. And... all the talk after the Perth test was about sledging and how Australia is so clever at sledging and all of that stuff. There's literally no chat about the sledging this time, guys. So, Ashwin, why is there no chat about the sledging? Is it? Can you only talk about it when you win?
I think so, right? You come off as a little bit sheepish if you feel like the need to talk about sledging instead of having lost the game. Look, part of me thought it was a little bit silly. It was for the cameras. The cricket broadcast, at least the one I was watching, often the commentators went quiet and they went into listening mode and they dialed up the stump cams. So they had obviously told the players that and encouraged a little, which I think feels a little bit silly. It didn't feel organic at times. Having said that, the times that it did come across, it did feel organic. I thought it was good. It was within the spirit of the game. It was entertaining. You know, Alan Border was saying while commentating as well, he's like, when you're 400 odd for six, you have to do something as a skipper, as a keeper to keep the chin up of your players, right? And so just sometimes that chatting, the conversation just helps keep them motivated to keep running hard and hitting the deck. So I thought it was all pretty well done. I think without mics, the nature of the sledging could have gotten quite a lot harsher, and that's more of the regular sledging you hear. But I think this was all pretty harmless, and it was good fun for us as viewers.
Varun, thoughts on the sledging? Who won that contest?
Yeah. I think Pant won it, man. I think it was a good comeback. Although I do have visions of Pant staying up all night with notes, to kind of thinking of what to say, running it past the teammates and all. But yeah, I think it's just fun. Like Tim Payne is, to me, he's not a bad guy. He kind of reminds me a little bit of George Bailey. These are the two guys in Australian cricket who you don't mind. You kind of enjoy watching them after seeing Pontings and Clarks of the world. So I think it wasn't done in bad spirit. But there was definitely a point where Rishabh Pant was just like incoherent, man. Like Nathan Lyon had to ask him three times to repeat himself while he was sledging. I think that's not really sledging then. Because Rishabh Pant was just about, come on, don't make us come back tomorrow. And he was just going on about that and Lyon just couldn't figure it out.
Well, I think there should have been some stand-in keeper lines after Payne dropped those catches, right? But anyway, we'll move on from that. Guys, the last point about the Boxing Day test before I hand over to Ashwin for the 2018 quiz. Pat Cummins, what a player. Is he the best all-rounder in the world right now, Varun?
I don't know if in the world, but I mean, for me, what I was thinking of has he got the potential to be kind of Australia's greatest all-rounder? And maybe you guys can help me out here. My mind is going blank. Who are the Australian all-rounders? Like, the only one I can think of is like Michael Bevan. But Australia, as far as I remember, has had a very clear set of four bowlers, five batsmen, and, you know, kind of Gilly or a strong wicketkeeper. But can you guys think of any?
Watson. Shane Watson.
Yeah, Watson. Okay. Absolutely. Watson. I don't think Cummins is at a Watson level yet. But what a player, man. On the same day, drained his energy completely drained. He took career best figures in bowling and hit a career best in his batting, all within an 8-hour window. So absolutely fantastic for me.
And don't forget his run out at Adelaide, right? Of Pujara right at the end of day. I mean, what a piece of fielding that is. I was watching it the other day and it's just fantastic. I mean, if you did that in the first over of a test, it'd be great. The fact that he did it in, I think, the 88th over of a long day in Adelaide was just, I mean, mind-blowing. And he's a player who can change the game in any facet, fielding, bowling, or batting. So I think that is the true definition of being a great all-rounder. And I think Australia has the makings of one. And, I mean, he seems like a decent guy as well. I mean, you might even seriously like him as a bloke. Who knows?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so guys, that wraps up the famous Boxing Day win. The first time India did it after 1981. It was fantastic. I stayed up till 3 a.m. last night. I'm sure wherever you were watching it in the odd hours of the day. And it was just, I mean, it's a great feeling having won that Boxing Day test. Kohli at the end handed over his pads to a little kid and all of that. So very, very feel good way to end the year. And speaking of ending the year, Ashwin has got a 2018 quiz for us. So over to you, Ashwin.
Yeah, so as we wrap up 2018, like DJ mentioned, we decided we'll spend some time doing a quick quiz. For those of you who are joining our show pretty recently, we haven't done this in a few weeks, but sometimes I pull together some questions and I like to quiz DJ and Varun. And so this year, this week, the theme is 2018. So guys, quickly on how the format works. There are 10 questions in total, 5 questions each with varying difficulties, okay? So you each get a question of 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 points. You choose which one you want at what point. So I'll ask you what difficulty you want. You tell me which one and I'll ask the question. When I'm done the question, there's a bonus follow-up, which is worth 1 point. So regardless of the difficulty, you can get 1 extra point on each question if you can get a little bit more specific on that specific question. And then finally, if you get it wrong, the original question, the other player will get a chance to steal, and the steal is only worth 1 point. So again, even if you get the 5-point question wrong, your steal is only worth 1. So let's see if we can make this work. I flipped a coin. It landed on heads, which I attributed to DJ. So DJ, you get to choose if you go first or second.
I'll go second.
Okay, so Varun, you go first. Pick your difficulty, 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. And it's a mix of ODI and test, and I'll specify as I'm asking.
Okay, 2.
2-point difficulty. Which, in test cricket, this is in test cricket, which player had the most number of ducks in the year 2018?
Across any team, right?
Test cricket for the year.
Yeah. I am going to say KL Rahul.
That is not correct. DJ, can you steal that for 1 point?
I want to say Faf du Plessis.
That's also incorrect. In fact, all the top 5 number of ducks were fast bowlers, so I'm surprised you didn't get to that. Varun, for your bonus question, I guess you already answered one batsman. That's not the one. Of non-bowlers, which batsman had the most ducks in 2018?
Sarfaraz?
That is also incorrect. Not a great start, guys. So the answer to the original question, who had the most ducks, was a tie between Stuart Broad and Mohammad Shami. And the non-bowler, basically, who had the most ducks was Johnny Bairstow. So he had a pretty rough year from a test cricket standpoint after a few good years. So the scores are still 0-0. DJ, you pick your difficulty. You have all 5 still available.
I'll go with 2 as well. This seems like a hard quiz, man.
Yeah, this seems damn hard.
I know. I thought this was pretty easy. So let's keep going and see how it goes. Which wicketkeeper took the most number of dismissals in a single innings in 2018 test matches?
Rishabh Pant.
That is correct. So the first points on the board, DJ is with 2. DJ, your bonus follow-up question. Can you tell me which non-wicketkeeper, so a fielder, took the most number of catches in an innings in 2018?
KL Rahul.
That is not correct. It was actually way back in the year. And sorry, Varun, there's no steals for the bonus. So I'm just going to tell you guys the answer. It was way back in January when a certain cricketer was still allowed to play the game. And that was Steve Smith, who took 5 catches in a test match in January. So Rahul, I believe, took 4. So the 2-pointers are done. Varun, 1, 3, 4, or 5 for your second question.
3.
Let's go with 3. In ODI cricket this time, the top 4 wicket takers in ODI cricket were all spin bowlers. Can you tell me who took the most wickets in ODIs in 2018?
I'm going to say Kuldeep Yadav.
That is not correct. Let me ask you the bonus before I let DJ steal. Can you name 2 of the 4, 2 of the top 4 top wicket takers? Remember, they're all spinners.
Rashid Khan and Kuldeep Yadav.
That is correct. So you got 2 of the top 4. That's your bonus point. DJ, can you steal who was the top wicket taker in 2018 in ODIs?
Rashid Khan.
It was Rashid Khan. So DJ with 1 point for the steal, Varun with 1 point for the bonus. The top 4 in order were, but Rashid Khan was number 1, and the other 3 were Kuldeep, Mujibur Rahman, and Adil Rashid. So good year for spinners in ODIs. DJ, your question, 1, 3, 4, or 5?
3.
Also 3, also an ODI question. What was the highest individual ODI score by a batsman in an innings in 2018?
Oh, wow.
This is tough, man.
I thought these were easy. Wait till 4s and 5s. Okay, let's keep going.
204 by Fakhar Zaman. Not out.
Ooh, that is close but incorrect.
Oh, wow.
Because you said the name already. Varun, can you steal? How many runs it was?
210.
That is correct. Fluke. Bonus point. Nicely done. Although I'm not sure if that length of pause was because of some Googling, but I have to trust you guys because I'm not looking at you. DJ, for your bonus steal, can you tell me who made the highest score for India in 2018 in ODI?
It's going to be Rohit Sharma.
That's correct. He made 162 versus West Indies. So the score.
Yeah, and Kohli scored 160, which is what I was confused with. Right, he scored 160, not out.
Nicely done, guys. So yes, that's correct. That anyway, Fakhar Zaman's 210 not out was the highest score. So twos and threes are gone.
I should get half a point for Fakhar Zaman, man. And telling him it's a double 100.
Unfortunately, the question was the score. So you were close. You gave Varun the hint. So score is 4 DJ to 2 Varun. Let's keep going. Varun, 1, 3, 1, 4, or 5?
4.
All right, we're going in ascending order. This is a test match question, okay? In test matches in 2018, 6 of the top 7 wicket takers were fast bowlers. Who took the most wickets in test matches in 2018?
Shami.
That's not correct. For your bonus question, let's see if you can get this. Which bowler has taken the most wickets in a single calendar year in all time?
Muralidharan.
That is also incorrect. Not a great quiz for you so far. DJ, can you steal the first question, which is who took the most number of wickets in test matches in 2018?
I want to say Bumrah.
That's also incorrect. So no points for this question. The correct answer is Kagiso Rabada. He took 52 wickets in the year. He had a breakthrough year as a quick bowler for South Africa. The other 5 of the top 6 were Dilruwan Pereira, Bumrah, Shami, Anderson, and Cummins. And the only spinner to make the top 7 was Nathan Lyon. So you guys were pretty close. DJ, so no points on that one. Score is still 4-2 to DJ. DJ, 1, 4, or 5?
1.
Ooh, we're going for the easy question. All right.
Runs on the board, man.
In ODIs in 2018, India had the highest win percentage with 75% of their ODIs resulting in a win. Who had the second highest win percentage in ODIs?
England.
England is correct with 73.91. So that's another point for DJ. Your bonus question. Who had the lowest percentage of wins in ODIs?
Australia.
That is also correct. Well done.
You cleaned up both.
They won 2 out of their 13 matches for a percentage of 15.38. Even Hong Kong, who won 1 out of their 6, had a higher win percentage. So not a good year for Australia in ODIs. Varun, there are 2 questions left. 1 or 5?
I'd have to go with 1.
You have to go with the 1. Let's clean these out. So it would be too easy if I asked you who had the most number of runs for India in ODIs in 2018. So I'm going to ask you who had the second highest number of runs in ODIs in 2018.
Rohit Sharma.
That is correct. So the point on the board for Varun. For your bonus question, Kohli had 1,200 runs, 1,202 in ODIs. Rohit was second. Can you tell me with a plus minus 50, how many runs Rohit made?
1,060.
He had 1,030. So you get that bonus point. I'll give that one to you. Well played. DJ, 4. So the score right now is DJ has 6, Varun has 4, but DJ still has 1 extra question remaining, remember. DJ, 4 or 5?
4.
All right. I like this question. Name the two, this is a test match question. Name the two Indians who played the most number of test matches in 2018. You have to name both. No partial marks.
So Kohli is one of them. The other one is Ishant.
That is not correct.
Oh, come on.
Varun, can you steal that one?
No, but I need my other question, my bonus first.
Actually, okay, sorry. Order wrong. So let's go to the bonus question. So 2 players played 13 test matches, which was the most. 3 players played 12 test matches. Can you name 2 of those 3 who played the second most number of matches?
It's Kohli again.
Kohli's played the most. I'm just asking for who played the second most. Kohli played 13 matches.
Okay.
Who played 12? 3 players did, and name 2 of them.
Rahane and...
I need your second one.
Pujara?
That is not correct, unfortunately.
Oh, man.
So there's no steal on the bonus. Varun, can you steal the original question? Name the 2 Indians who played the most test matches in 2018.
I'm going to say Ashwin.
That is not correct. So DJ, you mentioned both names, unfortunately. So no points on this one, just to give you the answer. The 2 Indians were Kohli and Pujara.
Oh.
India played 14 test matches in the year. Each of Kohli and Pujara missed 1. Pujara was dropped for 1 match, of course, as we mentioned, and Kohli sat out the Afghanistan match. So they each played 13 out of the 14. The next 3 players who played 12 tests were Rahane, Shami, and of course, our man KL Rahul, who played 12 out of India's 14 tests this year. So all we have left are your five pointers. Varun, are you ready for your five pointer?
Yeah, this has to be a Dangal finale with my five pointer.
Pretty much. The score is still 6-4 for Varun. So, Varun, who scored the highest individual score in a test innings in 2018?
Was it that Kushal, the guy, shit, I can't remember his name, the guy who batted with Angelo Matthews? What is his name?
If that's your guess, it's not correct, even though you didn't say the name, it's not the correct answer. Before I let DJ steal, I'm going to come to you. Before I let you steal, can you tell me who made the second highest individual score? I'm guessing not, but...
No, I cannot.
Okay, DJ, can you steal that one? Who had the highest individual score in a test innings in 2018?
I think it's Tom Latham, isn't it? He got...
DJ with the steal. Yes. Like I mentioned, the steal's only worth a point, but yes. Well played. Tom Latham made 264. I thought that would be easy for a five-pointer because it just happened about a week and a half ago. But anyway, Tom Latham made 264, not out. The only other player to make a double century in 2018 was Mushfiqur Rahman for Bangladesh. So interestingly, not a year of a ton of very big centuries. And DJ, your final five-pointer, although you've already won this one. Who made the second highest number of runs in Test cricket in 2018?
So Kohli is definitely the highest. Isn't it? It's the guy he just said. Mendes. Mendes scored he scored more than 1,000 runs. So I'm going to go with Mendes, man.
That I gave it to him, man. I just gave that.
That's a five-pointer for DJ. Well played, man. Yes. Well played. That takes it to 12. You gave it away. It was Kushal Mendes. I thought this was a really tough question because
Andrew Fernando on Twitter was like, he was like, this guy keeps getting panned and stuff, and he's just scored more than 1,000 runs. So
he made 1023. Since we're doing this, let's wrap this up with your bonus for this one. Who made the most number of runs, and plus minus 50, how many did he make?
King Kohli made the most number of runs, and it's something like 1270.
Oh, you missed it by two. It was 1322, so I would have given you 1272. Oh, So no bonus point there.
It was 1270 before this. It was something like 1250 before this game, right?
Yeah, and then I guess he made 82. So it would have been 1240 before. So final scores are 12 to DJ, 4 to Varun, thanks to the five-pointer that he won. So well played, gents. This was fun. Thanks for a great 2018. Lots of good discussions on the podcast. DJ, back to you.
Yeah, thanks, Ashwin. Thanks for the quiz. Thanks, Varun. Good effort. Some tough questions in there, man. They were hard. But everyone, thank you so much for listening to our podcast during 2018. It's been really good to hear from all of you guys. It's been really good to have your support. And we hope you keep listening in 2019. Thank you very much. And we will see you in 2019. Have a great new year.